My little tidbit of homeless history for you today is the two lost amendments to the Bill of Rights. First, a brief introduction to myself. My name is Josh Withrow, and I am the associate editor at Conservative Review and the director of policy at a new organization by Matt Kibbe called Free the People. The reason why these two lost amendments caught my attention is I actually didn't know much about them until pretty recently. Hopefully, you're at least somewhat aware of the process by which the first 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, were passed to the Constitution, where the anti-federalists wanted to have these extra amendments, these extra restrictions on the power of government passed in order to accede to the new federal constitution that was being passed. But of course, we know that there were 10 amendments passed. What happened to the other two? They kind of disappeared into the mire of history and remained more or less unknown to the vast majority of people for almost 200 years. Then, in the early 1980s, a student at the University of Texas at Austin named Gregory Watson was researching for a paper, and he happened upon one of these two lost amendments. This one had to do with congressional pay. Basically, it just placed the demand that if Congress were to pass a pay increase for itself, that pay increase doesn't come into effect until an election has happened in between. So that way, if Congress decides to pay itself $1 million apiece per year, the people can have a little say about that before it took effect. Watson became fascinated by this amendment and actually started a campaign to get it ratified, because as it turns out, there was no statute of limitations on these amendments that Congress passed back in 1789. So he started this campaign to get it passed, and sure enough, after a period of years, he actually managed to get enough states to ratify this amendment that it actually passed. And in 1992, this lost amendment limiting congressional pay to after an election, became the 27th Amendment to the United States Constitution, 202 years plus after it initially passed. So what about the Second Amendment? I said there were 12. The other amendment had to do with congressional apportionment. It had to do with the ratio of the number of members of Congress to the number of people that they represented. This was actually the first of the 12 original amendments that the original first Congress drafted up in order to make the Bill of Rights. See, the base text of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 2, merely states that the number of representatives shall not exceed 1 for every 30,000 people represented. But it didn't really provide any insight on how much larger the Congress or the size of districts should go from there. Presumably, the founders intended that states and members of Congress would figure that out by amending the Constitution as they went along. But many members of the anti-federalist camp, in particular, were concerned that districts must not get too separated from their federal representatives, lest they cease to be visible or accountable to those who elected them. For example, at the Virginia Convention in June 1788, George Mason said, "To make representative real and actual, the number of representatives ought to be adequate. They ought to mix with the people, think as they think, feel as they feel. They ought to be perfectly amenable to them, and be thoroughly acquainted with their interest and condition." Mason went on to note that the federal system of government likely precluded this ideal of representation from being truly realized, but he did at least hope that some sort of cap on the proportion of districts might be settled upon. But the worry that other founders had, including Madison, was that too many representatives representing too few people each would bring the representation of the House too close to mob rule, direct democracy. The entire system of the federal government was being set up to resist the emotional tides of the people and to try to slow the process of legislating down to a more rational, logical debate. Thus, the Federalists tended to argue that a smaller number of representatives would suffice. They also worried, in practical terms, that a legislature with too many members would simply become unwieldy, leading either to an undue concentration of power into the hands of a small number of the members, or just to a general inability to reach a consensus on any issue and to conduct the business of the House. Who was right? Who knows? A legislature of several thousand members might certainly be entertaining, but in any case, Madison won. The initial language of the apportionment amendment approved by the House was much more like Mason's preference, and it put the final ratio at not less than one representative per 50,000 citizens. To put that in a modern framework, given roughly 320 million citizens today, that would leave us with a House of Representatives comprising nearly 6,400 members. The final amendment passed by Congress didn't realize Mason's hope. Merely by switching the words "not less than" to "not more than" 1 per 50,000 citizens, the final language of the apportionment amendment, passed by the first Congress, only demanded that there should be no fewer than 200 representatives once the number of citizens became large enough. That'd be about 10 million people when it got to that point. Effectively, Madison's little tweak to the language there gutted the attempt to actually control the size of the districts. This was perhaps one of the reasons that when the initial 12 amendments were sent to the states, the apportionment amendment, along with that congressional pay amendment, came just one vote shy of ratification. As a result, Congress eventually took the question of its size into its own hands, setting up the current number of representatives at 435 all the way back in 1913. So now, the average proportional size of a congressional district has reached roughly one congressman for every 720,000 people. Suffice it to say, George Mason wouldn't be pleased. With our current population and district sizes having far exceeded the minimums set by the amendment, this one looks destined to remain a little-known footnote. A great topic for a trivia question, and otherwise just a fascinating little piece of homeless history. Be sure to tune in next week for another guest and another great story on homeless history.